Hi, I'm Scott Finn, and you're on the Front Porch. This week, we're going to talk about the new EPA regulations, the president's Clean Power Plan, and what West Virginia can and will be doing about it. We're joined by Secretary Randy Huffman of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Hey, Randy.
Hi, Scott.
We have, as always, Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
Another special guest filling in as well as he can for Lori Lynn, Kelly Merritt, editorial page editor of the Daily Mail, which is now part of the Charleston Gazette Mail.
That's correct. The Daily Mail editorial page still exists, so right. I can still say Daily Mail editorial page editor.
All right. And Randy, thanks for coming on. Before I get started, I need to do a little bit of disclosure and say that my wife works for you, mm-hmm. the Department of Environmental Protection. Mm-hmm. And so we'll dive into my first question, which is, when did you realize that you were the best secretary in the state's history?
When did I realize that?
You don't have to really answer
no,
that.
You get that. You're made to believe that from whoever works for you at the time. So, you know, right now I'm it. And I get told that, but I'm sure the day after I leave, somebody else will have that honor.
I was just thinking, I'm really glad you're here. We've never met before. Right. I've been in the same place. But I think you would probably have one of the toughest jobs in the state, even in normal times, given the tug of war and the political realities here. And we're not living in normal times. So I'd like to hear about what you think.
Well,
about that.
I believe that part of what makes it hard is the citizens, politicians, newspaper reporters, and others have the idea of what we should be doing, what they think we should be doing, and they have their own agenda or their own political ideology, and typically we get caught up in the middle of that. I've had very few discussions about any policy matters that were strictly on the scientific level, and that's really where they should be. I mean, it's a lot of politics and a lot of other things in there that influence policy, and that's probably what makes it hard. It's really, I mean, environmental protection, the notion of what environmental protection is, I mean, it is partly politics and it is partly policy. It's not all about the science. I often have said that, you know, science doesn't make any decisions. You know, people will say, like on climate change, they say the science is settled. All science does is give you data. People have to make judgments based upon that data, and people have to decide where the line is drawn.
Let's talk a little bit about the details.
Okay.
So the EPA final plan came out. It requires us to reduce, is it about 37% of our current power plant emissions in the state?
Yeah, some nuances to this that I think we have to understand. The 37% is the rate base. People need to understand. That's not a reduction of total CO2 produced today versus what's going to be. That's the rate at which we produce it.
Mm-hmm.
What's really important to understand about a rate is that if we only had one power plant left in the state, it's going to produce 2,000 pounds per megawatt hour. It won't meet the target. But the idea behind the target is that the energy mix that you have between coal, renewables, whatever that is, that on a pound per kilowatt hour basis, that rate, that overall rate of CO2 comes down from 2,000, over 2,000, which is coal's rate by itself, to a mix of 1,305. The point being with all of this is that the way the rule is set up is you have to diversify, and that's what EPA is trying to do, and what the administration is trying to force with this plan is a diversification of the energy mix to favor more renewables and push more CO2 from coal mainly and even gas out of the system.
One building block that's recommended by the EPA is using more natural gas power. Tell me, how many natural gas-powered power plants do we have in West Virginia?
From a combined cycle, we don't have any. None that have public utilities that where the power is put on the grid that way.
So practically none. What percentage of our power in West Virginia comes from coal then?
For all intents and purposes, it's 100. I think it's 96, 98, something like that.
Of the states that are named in the plan, only 47 states are named because Vermont has no fossil fuel plants. And Alaska and Hawaii, they're still trying to figure out because they're special. But of the 47 states, 29 states that have easier targets rate-wise and 17 that have harder. Is one reason we have a harder target to meet now because we are so dependent on coal-fired power?
I would assume that. We're not really sure. We never did get a good answer in any of the briefings we had about why they changed the number and why they made it a more difficult target. And it's significant because the original goal, it's a 10% increase.
Were you surprised? Did you have any indication from the EPA that they're going to increase it that much from the proposal to the actual rule?
No. It's 10% more, but it's actually over a 30% increase than the original proposal. So it went from 27 to 37% No, we didn't. We didn't see that one coming.
Two questions that I have, Kelly Merritt from the Daily Mail editorial page. One, are the goals realistic to achieve by 2030? And did the U.S. EPA people work with West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection people on coming up with these goals?
Well, answer to the second question first is no, they did not. Not sure who they worked with. We believe, I mean, there's a lot of evidence out there that they did work with NRDC and Sierra Club and some folks like that. They did not work with the West Virginia DEP in any way. Are they achievable? Well, I mean, with enough money, you can do almost anything. So here's what you have. In order to get at the rate of 1,305 pounds per megawatt hour, you have to displace, and I don't know the numbers on this yet, but you have to displace enough coal with renewable. You can't add, you cannot add enough power to balance, to average this out. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about math. You can't add enough renewables to make 2,000 go to 1,305 without adding a lot more power to the grid. So you have to displace it. And that's the hard part for me is you're talking about capital investment. You're talking about private sector spending, all of that. And you're talking about an energy policy. We're basically going to decide for the state of West Virginia, and the states collectively are going to decide on behalf of the nation an energy policy. Finally, I joked the other day, we're going to have one. We've been saying it for a long, long time. We need an energy policy. We're going to have an energy policy, and it's going to be forced on us by a regulatory agency rather than through policy development.
But again, for the new power to come on, that's generally an Appalachian Power or First Energy or
they're the ones going to have to spend the money, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you force them to do that?
Well, that's the big question. How do we do that? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the EPA would seem to imply in this rule that we have control over the end of pipe, end of stack emissions, so that if a power plant is producing 2,064 pounds per megawatt hour, that the regulatory agency, whether it's us or them, would have the authority to require that end-of-pipe emission to be 1,305.
So in other words, you could conceivably, if they're not in compliance, you could fine them. I mean, you could shut plants down to try to reach the right mix. I
think that's the idea of how to get to the enforcement of it.
But does DEP have that authority now, or did they work with the Public Service Commission?
Well, if CO2 is a pollutant, it's designated as a pollutant like NOx or SOx or any of the others, then we probably would. But we need to understand how power plants work. A lot of elected folks out there and a lot of others in various industries are calling for us to, you know, shake our fist at EPA and all of that. Electric generating units, power plants, they don't operate that way. They need certainty. They need long lead times to make investments and all of that. So they want to know the rules, and at the end of the day, they're going to get there. It might be extremely expensive.
So Attorney General Morrissey, he's already leading the effort, the legal fight against this. But isn't it true that we have to, in some ways, we do have to participate in this in order to even be able to have standing to sue?
I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure how all that works. But I will tell you this. I've been saying this a lot lately, is, you know, about the just say no option. First of all, the plan's not due. The initial plan is not due until September 6th of 2016. So you don't ever say no until you need to say no, which is over a year away. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if just saying no is your position, then what you're saying is, I believe I'm going to win in court, win a suit that hasn't even been filed yet. And if I lose that, I'm willing to accept the federal plan. Because if you lose, if you just say no and you lose, the federal plan is going to guide energy policy in West Virginia. So you won't. My point with that is you don't have a seat at the table if you just say no.
And the federal plan, I've heard it could be a cap. They don't even know yet, right? It could be a cap and trade scheme.
My sense is that it would be cap and trade, because that's the easiest thing for them to do. And that's what they know and understand.
Well, it seems like one thing that's happened here is that, you know, a lot of people blocked this at the policy, at the legislative level for a long time, so they didn't really have a place at the table to really negotiate what could have worked and mm-hmm. things like that. So now some kind of solution's being imposed from outside.
Yeah, climate change and that whole discussion of climate change and its impacts is something that, in Congress, that there never could be, there was never any movement on that. The president, I assume, believes he has the the authority to go about it this way, which is maybe different than what we're used to seeing. You know, the president, I mean, by his own admission, needs this and wants this in order to leverage the rest of the world and to be that example and all of that. This 32% or whatever it is for the U.S. and the reduction of CO2 by itself in a vacuum without any other worldwide impact doesn't have any effect at all on, I think it's like 0.02 of a degree on global temperature. So by itself, this doesn't do anything. It's necessary, if you believe that this issue needs to be addressed, and it's necessary that the rest of the world participate, or it's not going to have any impact.
And it's one of those chicken and egg things, right? So if we don't do it, why would China? If we don't get started with this, then is our plan to do nothing and just let temperatures rise unchecked? I mean, well, now we're getting into politics. Let's pull back for a second, because I still have some specific issues I want to ask you about. So what is the role now of the DEP then? What have you been directed, your bosses, Governor Tomlin, what have you been directed to do to respond to this? And also, there are some legal issues with the state legislature.
I'll touch on those. Well, first of all, we're reading it and trying to get through it, and there's a lot of stuff there to go through. So we've got our air quality experts looking at it to try to understand it well enough that we can begin to start making some judgments about, you know, how the calculations are going to work. House Bill 2004 that was passed this past spring did a couple things. One, it requires us to do a feasibility study within 180 days of the effective date of the rule. Requires us to do a feasibility study and to report it to the legislature. We're working on putting the mechanics of that together. Not exactly sure how much of that we're going to do ourselves, how much of it we're going to ask someone else to do. That basically will give you a menu. It'll create a number of if-then scenarios, you know, regarding the energy mix, and make some calculations and some assumptions. And then before we actually submit a plan, which our first iteration of that would be in September of next year, it requires legislative approval before it can be submitted.
Is it this policy of the Tomlin administration then to seek legislative approval? Is that necessary?
It's in the statute. We don't have any choice. He doesn't have any choice. Without that statute, no, to submit a state implementation plan, it would not be. The legislature passed this specifically aimed at wanting to weigh in on the plan before it's submitted.
Well, it sounds like we have a special session in our future next year.
Well, it's going to be interesting.
People like James Van Nostrand, who is WVU law professor, and he's the head of their Center for Energy and Sustainable Development, he thinks that we can comply. Folks like Evan Hansen, who is with Downstream Strategies, who is a scientist working out of Morgantown, he thinks we can comply. Mm-hmm. Governors and lots of other folks have called it unattainable. What explains the difference in opinions about whether this is doable?
Well, let me just bear with me. I'll tell you exactly. We can comply if we shut down John Amos Unit Number 3, Fort Martin Units 1 and 2, John Amos Unit Number 2, Mount Storm Unit Number 3, Granttown Unit 1A. Yeah, we have to take another nearly 4,000 megawatts of coal-fired power production offline, and we could comply. Those are for illustration purposes only for everyone, that we don't have any plan to shut down those. That's a total of 3,820 megawatts more. The six shutdowns, facilities that have been shut down since 2012, account for almost 3,000 megawatts. So we're talking about more than doubling what we've lost in the past 2 years.
Another way of looking at it, though, is that we've made progress since 2012 already. And that is without any regulatory scheme, that the power plants have preemptively closed down some of their mostly older facilities in preparation for this, right?
Well, not in preparation for this, for other reasons. But yes, they have taken a lot of power production offline, coal-fired power production offline.
You know, one thing that the Tomlin administration has done that's worked in the past when facing other decisions is brought in, you know, expertise in groups that aren't political, don't have a huge number of axes to grind, like with the prison overcrowding issue and juvenile justice, mm-hmm. and the actuaries brought in on Medicaid expansion. I mean, I think that might be an approach to consider, to bring in as many heads as we can mm-hmm. to look at this.
Yeah, I think as it settles down a little bit, and the reality of the consequences of doing nothing and the amount of work that has to be done, and as all of that sets in, I think that there'll be the need to start reaching out and engaging. I'm not sure that you could find anybody that knows how to spell CO2 that doesn't have some political view about it. So that's going to be a hard, that's going to be hard to do.
Because you had this requirement to report to the legislature, even if the just say no option is the option that's chosen, you're going to be working toward the report to the legislature anyhow, right?
So that's I've got, you know, the 180-day clock will start ticking as soon as it comes off the Federal Register, which, you know, hopefully we still have a few more weeks. But the September 6th deadline, that's coming, September 6th of next year. Yeah, the clock is ticking on us. So there's a lot of work to do. And the first thing that needs to be done is you got to pick a path. There's a number of paths you could go down, but you've got to pick one or two and start heading in that direction, and you get so far down those paths, and it would be really hard to back up and choose a different one. Because the other option we have, I talked about those rates and explained what rates the rate based was. We also have the option of going on a mass based, just the total CO2, which ironically is probably more achievable if there is a cap and trade mechanism built into that. And I know that's a dirty word to a lot of people, but you know, I'm just trying to have a fact-based conversation here.
It might be less onerous to a lot of folks than a straight-out regulatory scheme.
Yeah, it doesn't limit the amount of coal you can burn or power you can produce. It just says that if you're going to do that, it's kind of like salary cap in baseball. You can pay more. You just got to pay a premium or a penalty for it.
You got to offset it somewhere else.
Yeah.
If the United States believes in reducing emissions at the level or this kind of a plan, we have elected representatives to come together to make policy decisions of this sort. This is a major new economic and regulatory policy shift. And that's something that we have a Congress for. We have a separation of powers in the federal government, executive branch, judicial branch, and representative branch. And that's what we elect our representatives for.
And Kelly, I mean, look, there was a debate about it for years and years and years. And there was a group of people, including, I must say, the coal industry, that just said they picked the just say no option to cap and trade. And are we just going to keep saying no, no, no forever now? Or do you think this will scare people into trying to come up with better options?
Well, it goes back to leadership. Do you have the executive leadership that's at the federal level to say this is to rally people around whatever the issue is? And we don't have the leadership currently in our federal head of state to rally people together, and it just seems to be much more partisan. As Secretary Huffman just said, our state's own Department of Environmental Protection was not involved in these developing this. They didn't come to the DEP. They came to the National Resources Defense Council. They came to Sierra Club. This is not exactly representation of the people impacted. You talk about, you know, political angles. Those are groups that had serious political angles. Talk to the regulators within the state, and talk to the ratepayers, the people who pay for the electricity, and talk to the people whose jobs it is to mine the coal, produce the natural gas. Let's get them involved instead of making this just taking an issue that was already political and making it highly even more partisan and more political.
Well, let me ask you this, Secretary. If you had been sitting down and directed to sit down with the EPA and try to come up with ways of dealing with this, how would it look different?
I don't think the targets would have been as steep as quickly. I think you would have, I think you just had a lot of those red states that would have, you know, politics of it and the reason that the administration had to go this way, I don't think you'd ever got there. You know, if you're sitting in the White House and that's one of your stated objectives when you took office, the only way you can get to the level of cuts that they got was to force it upon the country.
But you're sitting in the White House and you're elected and you still have a constitution to follow. You still have a set of laws passed by Congress that you must follow.
And just personally, I do think climate change is going to make a lot of the other problems we're looking at look pretty small in the big picture. And that's one thing I think that adds urgency. And I don't think truth necessarily correlates with who has money or power. And I think some people really want to hold off action until it's too late and then say nothing could have been done to start with. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a good option either.
Well, what Secretary Huffman said, you know, it's not that it's not achievable or attainable. It's just you can do practically anything with the right amount of money and time. And the question will be, without us having this broader discussion that should have been held before the rule was issued, how much is this going to cost us? And could we have come up with better options that would not have been so hurtful for coal miners and a lot of people in West Virginia?
Secretary Huffman, this affects you in a lot of different ways. You know, you're a native West Virginian. You're a sportsman, right? You're a fisherman.
Yes, yes.
What's it like to have to be in the middle of this fight, and how are you dealing with that?
Well, dealing with it better now than maybe I would have when I first took the job. I understand it a lot better, the whole dynamic of how policy's made and how politics influence that. So I understand that better. I don't give my righteous indignation speeches too much to my staff that has to listen to me rant about how the world is. So I enjoy working with people that have different perspectives that are willing to come to the center. I don't have much for folks that want to, on either side, that want to stay way off to the left or right and just argue without a desire to make things, but I don't have much use for that. I've had a lot of problems, a lot of issues that come up, and you say, this is unsolvable. And, you know, given enough time and enough opportunity to reflect, you know, it maybe becomes more solvable. This is tough. You know, one of the things that we're dealing with here is just a lot of uncertainty. This will get in the hands of the courts, then everyone loses control, including the EPA, and so you don't know how it's going to turn out. A couple things, if I might, in closing here, global issues require global solutions. I think that's what the president's trying to do, but we're betting the farm on it. If the rest of the world doesn't want to play, by the time we figure that out, it'll be too late for the U.S. economically. Now, if the climate change issue is real and not addressed, then it could be too late for everyone in the, you know, on the planet, as Rick said. But the other thing I think is really important. We live in West Virginia, and we're kind of in this place where coal is talked about a lot. We think the rest of the country agrees with us. They don't. Senator Manchin came back from Washington after he'd been up there for first few months, and I heard him say publicly that, listen, if you know, you're not the biggest dog on the porch necessarily. You don't want there to be a vote in this country about for coal or against coal, because that vote, you would lose that vote. Now, a lot of folks don't understand how power is produced. You ask some people, where's power? It comes out of the electrical socket. So you have that, but, you know, ignorance is part of what we deal with on any issue. You can't elect that away. You can't, you know, everyone's looking to, well, not everyone, but some folks are looking to the elections next year saying, well, this might change. It's not going to change to the degree that people think, because there's a mood across the country about what fossil fuels are, and you're not going to elect that away. So I think we need to learn to work within that environment. And I think that coal and its place in the energy market and in the economy will continue to be strong. But if we just fight and think that we're so obviously right that we're going to win, we'll lose.
Secretary Randy Huffman of the State Department of Environmental Protection, thank you for joining us on the Front Porch.
You're welcome.